Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Amateur Traveler, episode 542. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about forts and beaches, mosques, wadis, and frankincense as we go to Oman. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. I'm not sure when you're listening to this show, but it's coming out on New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2016. I, for one, am looking forward to a new year. 2016 was not always terrific. In this new year, remember, we're doing two amateur traveler trips, one to Japan and one to India. More about that later. But first, let's talk about Oman. I'd like to welcome the show Claire Robinson, who has come from zigzagonearth.com and come to talk to us about the Sultanate of Oman. Claire, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chris. I'm excited to join you today.
And I think people probably by now know that you are not from Oman.
Yeah, exactly. I'm French, so you can hear it. You can't miss it. But I've traveled to Oman last year and really loved it. And I'm really, really happy to share with you all the beauty of that country.
Excellent. Why should somebody go to Oman? Let's put it on map before
we... It's on the Arabian Peninsula. It's just south of Dubai and north of Yemen. The mainland country is located around the capital city of Muscat. And there is also a side land that is next to the Emirates and on the Strait of Hormuz.
Okay. Excellent. And why should someone go to Oman?
First of all, I'm really happy that Lonely Planet has decided this year that it would be in their list of top countries to visit for 2017. It's number 8. They've decided to explain why they put it on the list with all the a few luxury hotels coming in and a big theme park. And I'm a bit disappointed by that. So happy they're on the map, but very disappointed. So I'm really glad today that I get a chance to share with you the real beauty of Oman. It's a very good mix of culture, history, nature. It's very authentic, especially compared to its neighboring country. They've been really good at keeping a lot of the land wild. The capital city has no tall towers and everything. It's very respectful of the environment. You have this a lot of contrast in the country. You have those white colors against the bare gray mountains. You have the empty wadis with the green of the palm trees. You have the orange sand dunes in the desert. And yeah, it's just wild. And also it has all this history. And they're very good at restoring all their site and respecting all the old buildings that they can have and trying to make them great again. I like how they are very good at respecting and keeping their culture.
Okay. Now, you used a term there that we're going to define, and that is a wadi. So, okay, we've talked about it before in this show, on the show we did on Jordan, for instance. But let's define that to make sure that people know it.
It's basically a valley, a narrow valley, big towering cliffs on each side, and normally a river going in the middle.
Okay. In the U.S., we would probably call it a slot canyon. So you're talking about something that is really sometimes little more than a channel carved directly into the rock. And sometimes if you're walking up a wadi, you're walking in the river itself and there's not room for much else.
Yeah,
Yeah. Or it can be a dry.
It could be a dry
wash as well, a dry wash. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Okay, excellent. And where would you recommend we start for a 1 week itinerary in Oman?
Well, definitely in the capital city. Mm-hmm. Anyway, most of the international flight, they fly in Muscat, and there is already a lot of things to see in the capital city. So any 1 week itinerary should start with 2 days in Muscat, where you can discover, for example, the Sultan Qaboos Grand Mosque. It's a beautiful building, all white, with the prayer hall, which has a huge chandelier. And you can also go to the Royal Opera House, that because the Sultan is a lover of opera and music. And he built these beautiful buildings with a lot of wood carving inside. And apparently it's also very good in terms of technical sound and everything. Mm-hmm. You can also go for more culture and go to the fish market. Oman is not yet a very touristic place, so not everything has been turned into souvenirs and all that. So if you go to the fish market, you see the locals going to the fish market, buying their fish for the day.
Okay, well, let's slow down and do all of those in a little more detail. So you mentioned, first of all, the mosque.
Yes.
Tell us a little more about that.
It was a gift from the Sultan to the nation. Mm-hmm. It's an imposing piece of Islamic architecture, and it can welcome 2,000 worshippers. So you can visit it only in the morning and not on Fridays.
Meaning as a tourist, you can only
go in
the morning.
As a tourist, yeah. Okay. So it's allowed for tourists and non-Muslim to visit it, but yeah, mm-hmm. only
when
in the morning.
Dressed appropriately, obviously.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. So for the men, you have to cover your arms and your legs, and for mm-hmm. the women, you also have to cover your head. Mm-hmm. They have a big garden all around it, and it has the 5 minarets, of course, and a beautiful dome at the middle. So you can walk on the outside, and it's a lot of layers of white walls and carvings, but it's very elegant and simple. It's not overdone. And you can walk on the outside corridors and see beautiful mosaics. And then you can go inside the prayer hall, which is really nice to see. The main prayer hall is very famous because it has a 40-meter tall chandelier with Swarovski crystals. It's very impressive. It's also famous for its carpet. There's a very big hand-woven carpet, which weighs 21 tons.
Well, I'm not sure that everybody has been in a mosque. So one of the things that one of the reasons you would notice the carpet is there don't tend to be any seats.
Oh, no seats at all.
Just the carpet. So the carpet is what you were standing on, what you were sitting on, what you were kneeling and praying on as well.
So it has been done by hand, as I said, and assembled on site. I don't remember how many pieces it is, but it's really big.
Well, you mentioned 5 minarets.
Which are the 5 pillars of Islam.
Yeah. Well, one of the other interesting things is it tends to be that the more minarets, the higher the position of the person who built the mosque. There was a mosque, the Sultanahmet Mosque in Istanbul, or the Blue Mosque, was very controversial at the time it was built because it had 6. And there was only one other mosque in the world that had 6, and that was in Mecca. And there was this great controversy that he needed to tear down one of the minarets. And finally, his solution instead was to pay to build a 7th minaret in Mecca. is the story they tell in Istanbul, at least.
Okay.
And so only 5 here. Is also then a symbol of this is an important person who built this mosque. Whether that's official or unofficial, it tends to be that way. If you go and you see a mosque and it's the neighborhood mosque, it's going to have 1.
Yeah.
You mentioned dress, and that for the mosque, especially for women, you're going to cover your head. As a tourist in Oman, did you just need to do that while you were at the mosque, or did you find that in general you were better received if you covered your head the rest of the time?
No problem at all.
Okay.
If you cover, of course, your shoulders and knees, you'd be respectful.
Right. Yeah, not a place to wear mini skirts or tank tops.
But now people are really open, and they're really open about freedom of religion. So you cover your head only in the mosque.
Okay, great. And then where did you take us next?
The Royal Opera House.
Oh, right.
So it's a new building as well. So,
did you take in an opera at the Royal Opera House?
No. Okay. And when I travel, I don't travel with long dresses. You need to dress very well if you want to go to see the opera. But luckily for us, it's open in the morning as well to tourists.
On a tour, I'm assuming?
When you enter, you can get a private tour with one of the person there. And it's a lot of marble. So from the outside, it's all white. And when you get inside, it's very heavily decorated. But not as much as the Opera Garnier in Paris, which is too much. But this one, you will have, for example, a lot of wood and wood carving with gold leaf on it. A lot of glass as well. Sometimes if there is no rehearsal, you can go inside the representation or the stage and have a look. And they have this small screen for translation during a show, which I found nice. It's very interesting, a technical place, because they can switch between two types of settings, depending if you have an opera or if it's a different type of play. Apparently, you need different stage settings for the sound. So it can switch from one to the other.
And then in terms of getting a tour, were you able to get one in French, or did you do one in English? Or
I always travel in English.
Okay. Well, there tends
to... I don't think there was anyone speaking French.
It does tend to be that if there's not something, if you can't do the native language, then there is more availability of English as ironically the lingua franca.
I prefer the English language, to be honest. I think it's an easier language and it's more effective.
Okay.
Yeah. When I try to write something in English, it takes me 3 words. In French, it takes me 6. And in German, it takes me 9 words.
Well, so. Yeah, but in German, those 9 words would all be in one word. They'd be combined.
Yeah.
So that's really not fair to say. Excellent. Where are we going after the opera?
Well, if it's on the same day, then maybe in the afternoon you can go to the Corniche and the Souk.
So the Corniche, which would be the shore line.
It's not very long, because actually Muscat has a lot of hills. So the different neighborhoods are separated by those hills. And there is one of the older section, which has what they call a Corniche, where you can walk along the shore. It has the big boat of the Sultan. It's just next to the souk.
And we say the big boat of the Sultan, the yacht of the Sultan.
Yacht, yeah.
Okay. I'm guessing big.
Big, yeah, really big.
And you did not get invited on the yacht of the Sultan.
No.
Maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
After they hear this episode. And then you took us to the souk.
Yes.
So the traditional market inside, I'm assuming?
Half-half, actually. It's half-half, kind of... This one is a strange souk, but yeah, it's half open, half closed.
Okay.
I would say if you like souk, maybe Oman doesn't have all the colors and the things we can see in souk in other country. It's quieter.
Okay.
So yeah, if you're expecting the big busy souk with all the spices and colors, you might be a bit disappointed by the ones in Oman.
Now, what would you get at a souk in Oman? What sort of things we'd see? I know that one of the UNESCO World Heritage Sites, for instance, is the land of frankincense. So
yes,
I'm guessing I can probably find frankincense at the souk.
Yeah. Yeah. So the land of frankincense is actually in the south of Oman, in the region around the town of Salalah. Yeah, of course, in every souk, you can find frankincense at different types.
Which is a resin from the bark of a tree, as I recall, fragrant resin.
Yeah. Okay. And they have a lot of those trees that are wild again, still wild. So,
well, and we also talked about that when we did an episode on one of the two episodes we've done on Yemen.
Well, yeah, the frankincense tree, they grow near the front, near the border with Yemen. Yeah.
Yep. But that makes perfect sense. So, and what else would you find in a souk, anything that surprised you?
The souk in Oman has a lot of imported goods.
Okay, got it. A lot of the products of the indigenous people of China.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. And then I started to ask, when asking about whether the souk was inside or outside, temperature and weather, and when did you go?
I visited in December.
Okay.
And I had a really, really good weather. It's very nice, not too hot and not cold. I would recommend not going between June and September. Mm-hmm. Because like everywhere in the Middle East, it gets crazy hot. If you want to go to this at this time of the year, you would do like the locals and go to the south and Salalah, because the monsoon is there and it's it's cooler and it gets all green. So the locals like to go down during summer to cool down.
I didn't realize that the monsoons would reach all the way over there. Although actually that should make sense. I'm reading a book on the history of India, and they talked about the Arab traders who would sail from this region up to India when the monsoon winds blow in one direction, and then they would basically stay for months, and then when it reverses directions, they would flow back here. So they would sail back here. So I should have known that, actually. Excellent. Well, where would we go next?
At the end of the day, a nice place to hang out is the Al Kurum beaches. So it's the more modern part of the city, and it has a long strand of white sand, mm-hmm. of sand, not especially white. And it's a great place to watch sunset and just enjoy the locals, especially on the weekend. They come here and they play football or just relax. It's a very nice place to end the day.
Excellent. Anything else you want to do in Muscat before you take us out to some of the other places you want us to see?
Yeah, I think the fish market, well, it's a bit raw. You can see fish being open and all that. If you like culture, a lot of locals go there. They pick their fish, discuss the price and all that, and then you can give it to someone who will prepare the fish for you. It's still a lot of locals going there, so it's very interesting to see.
Okay.
One thing you can do also from Muscat is take a boat tour. So you can go either to the Damaniyat Islands or just to the shore south of Muscat. You can see sometimes dolphins, or you can go snorkeling.
And let's back up to the islands you were talking about. These are the islands at the point?
They are about 1 hour boat ride to the east of Muscat. And it's a series of 7 islands. There's not much to see on them, but it's a great spot for diving and snorkeling.
Okay. Excellent. Where are we going next?
We'll go outside of Muscat. So you can do, with just 1 week, you'll have to pick the type of itinerary you want. So mm-hmm. if you like nature, you would go south. And if you like history, you can go north and inland. You can mix a little bit of both, but then you will have to drive more over the week.
Okay.
So my favorite is the nature itinerary. So if you go south, you would have a first stop at a big sinkhole with emerald waters in the bottom. Hmm. You can walk all around. It doesn't take long, but it's very impressive. You know, it's just big drop like that in
is this the close to Muscat or?
It's a 1 hour and 20 minute drive from Muscat. Yeah, so you can swim at the bottom or just admire the colors.
And what is the name of the place we're going to?
It's Bima Sinkhole. There is a story about it. For the locals, it's because a star crushed and created the sinkhole. Well, the geologists disagree, but it's a local legend that so that's why the name, which I can't pronounce, translate to the falling star.
Interesting. So that seems to be near the town of something like Dibba al Bay'a.
Probably, yeah. It's the local name is Hawayat Najem. Okay. Or something like that, that translate like the falling star.
Excellent.
So it's a short stop, very scenic. And then you can go to one of my favorite spots in Oman. It's called Wadi Shab.
So this is one of those wadis we were talking about. Mm-hmm.
It's one where you can't go by car inside. So it's still very wild. And so you stop at the parking at the entrance. You take one boat for just 1 minute to cross to the other side. And then you have roughly 1 hour of hiking in this canyon that is large at the beginning and that gets narrow. Mm-hmm. And you have these big cliffs on each side. And towards the end of the wadi, you have to go swimming. So you can't go further along just walking. You have a series of pools. And you go swim, and then you walk again, and you swim until you reach a cave. I really enjoyed it. It's very peaceful, especially as I was there in the morning. There was almost nobody there. And there is something about swimming. You're more connected to nature, and you don't have the same look at the surroundings as when you walk. you can focus on everything around, and it, and you just feel calm with the water around you. Very enjoyable.
Excellent. Now, you have mentioned you can't drive. Were you driving or did you have a driver?
I had a driver.
Okay.
But what I realized, it's actually very easy to drive in Oman. Mm-hmm. A lot of the roads are brand new.
Okay, makes sense.
And large. There's not that many inhabitants. Mm-hmm. Oman is about less than half the size of Texas, and it has 1/7 of the population.
Okay.
Most people live in the cities, and there's nothing in between, so it's very easy to drive. There are, of course, a few crazy drivers that go very fast, like everywhere. Generally speaking, even though I don't like driving, I would go driving in Oman.
Okay. Well, there's also not that many highways that you'd be that easy to get lost.
Yeah, not easy to get lost.
Okay.
So yeah, I think spending some time in Wadi Shab is a great way to see something very typical of Oman, beautiful Wadi. Mm-hmm. Then I would recommend going to sleep in Sur so that you can wake up early in the next morning and go watch the turtles making their way back to sea. There is a reserve called Ras Al Jinn, and they protect the breeding ground for turtles. So they have tours in the evening and tours in the morning. We always stay behind the turtles with only red lights so that we don't bother them. Mm-hmm. And it's very impressive how resilient they are at finding the right scent for their eggs and making their way back to the water, because it's really not easy for them.
Looking at the map and seeing just how completely clueless I was that the monsoons would go that far, as you're in Sur and you look across the water of the Gulf of Oman, you probably can't see the other side, but if you were, you would be pretty close to the border between Iran and Pakistan. So yeah. You're not that far from India, not that, and very, very close to Pakistan. I feel ignorant, but
a lot of people don't realize where Oman is. It's one of the first thing you ask me the reasons to visit Oman, mm-hmm. seeing the face of people when you told them you've been visiting the Sultanate of Oman. I have no idea where it is.
Very cool.
It's quite fun.
So your drive so far from Muscat, you basically drove along the Gulf of Oman to get out to Sur, which is pretty close to the easternmost point in Oman.
Yes.
Okay, excellent.
Then I will go inland. There is one other wadi that is popular that is called Wadi Bani Khalid. So there you can swim as well, but it will be a bit more touristic because you can reach the pools by car. There's only 10-minute walk.
Okay.
But if you go to the upper section of the wadi, it's really beautiful. It's a short swim, but with beautiful white rocks around. But then you go to the desert. If you love desert, there is one beautiful desert called Wahiba Sands with big sand dunes. It's longitudinal sand dunes. If you go on Google Earth and check Wahiba Sands, get a little bit higher, you'll see those lines of sand dunes.
Okay.
It's very impressive. So I spend the night there. And so you have camps, several camps. There's no permanent settlement in the desert, mm-hmm. Only a few touristic camps. But one of the great things to do in Oman is go wild camping. You can wild camp anywhere, which is not too close to habitation.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
If you're able to drive yourself in sand dunes, you can go not too far in the desert, preferably, because it can be dangerous.
Well, that was the first thing that occurred to me.
Yeah. You can go just one or two dunes and then enjoy wild camping there. It's very nice because when you wake up, you're all alone in the desert and you can go and watch sunrise and see the colors change and just listen to the silence.
Did you do wild camping while you were there?
I did 2 nights of wild camping, one on the beach and one in the desert.
And did you bring your own gear or did you find an outfitter?
I found a guide who had her own equipment.
Okay.
For wild camping, but you can...
So did you have a guide with you as well?
Yeah, for part of it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the desert, so you can spend one night, maybe if you go to the camps, you can do some camel riding or four-wheel drive in the sand dunes with their driver. Then you can make your way towards the biggest town inland, which is Nizwa. Mm-hmm. And it's famous for its fort and its souk. So it's right in the middle of the city. I quite enjoyed the fort. because it has a nice museum and interesting displays of how life was there. Mm-hmm. And you can go to the top of the tower, and from there you have a very good view of the valley around and the city and the palm trees and the bare mountains around. I think this was a very enjoyable town.
Now, I know that there is one fort that is a UNESCO site, and I couldn't tell if it's that fort or not.
No, it's not that one. It's not far from Nizwa. It's okay. Bala Fort.
Yep.
You know you're in Oman when every 5 minutes you see a fort? They have a lot of forts.
Well, and like when you see a castle, every town in France, it tells you a little bit that at some time in the history, things were not so calm.
And then you can make your way to the mountains. Oman has two major touristic regions in the mountain. The first one is Jebel Agda. You're allowed to go up there only with a four-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. The road is actually in very good condition. It's paved and all the way, but because it's very steep, there is a gate and they allow only four-wheel drive inside. But you can organize with a hotel from the plateau to come and pick you up.
So to come pick you up because the hotel is up the mountain?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
There you have villages, terraces. That's where they do a little bit of farming. But my favorite mountains were Jebel Shams. So Jebel Agda is being developed for tourism, and it's a beautiful place. But I really liked Jebel Shams, which is the Oman Grand Canyon. Most people would maybe be disappointing because when they imagine the Grand Canyon, they imagine the one in the U.S. With all those bends and
which
colors.
Kind of big, yeah.
Yeah. The Oman Grand Canyon is actually not that wide, not as colorful, but it's very deep. It's just, you don't see the bottom. It's just drops. It's very dizzying. And there's nothing at all. Yes, there are two resorts at the top. A few houses of people with their goats. I spent the night there and I watched sunset. Very nice. I really enjoyed it.
Excellent. Yeah, looking at some of the pictures, I can see why they call it the Oman Grand Canyon. I mean, there is a resemblance.
Yes.
Although it looks even drier than the Grand Canyon.
It's very dry. Only in the wadis in Oman, you will see trees and water. And there is a little bit of farming land in the northern part of the country, which is less touristic because it's mostly agricultural land.
Excellent. Where to next?
Next, I would finish with what is called the Rustaq Loop, which has three forts. Okay. And so you can pick any one of them or do the three if you want.
Now, is this the loop that you said if we wanted history, we'd go this direction?
Yes. So we come back to that. So I picked one. The Rustaq Loop has Al-Azam Castle, which has mazes of rooms. The Rustaq Fort is one of the oldest one in Oman. Mm-hmm. And the Nakhal Fort is considered one of the most picture perfect because it stands on top of a hill. Just know that in most forts, you just have the rooms. And that's it. There's no, not always explanation or things inside.
Okay.
And the forts were very simple, so there's no decor. Al-Azam Castle actually has some displays like the Nizwa Fort. So if you want a bit more information, it's a nice one to do.
Were you able to find any guides online or offline that gave you more information? Or was it mostly the view of the fort and the view from the fort?
Yeah, mostly the view on the fort and from the fort.
Okay.
So that was more nature-oriented. Mm-hmm. But then if you want to go more history, so you can start with that Rustaq Loop. And then you can go to the UNESCO sites of Al-Ain and Bat.
Okay.
I really enjoyed Al-Ain. It's old beehive tombs from the Bronze Age, so 5,000 years old. And Al-Ain on top of that is that there's a series of tombs and behind beautiful mountains. So the contrast is really nice. Really enjoyed the site.
Just to put this in perspective, we're talking about the third millennium BCE. So roughly 4,500 years ago or so.
Yeah.
So really, really old tombs.
Really, really old. Yeah. And some were really big. What is strange is that it's a UNESCO site and it doesn't look like it. The one in Al-Ain, there's no sign, there's nothing. You just cross a farm and go there.
A little bit off the beaten path.
Yes. If you like history, then you would go to many other forts that are inland. You have a very big selection to choose from. And another thing is to stop in a village. And for example, there is Birkat Almoz, which is not far from Nizwa, where you can see the fallage system, which is the old irrigation system, which is also a UNESCO patrimonial.
I saw that. I was surprised to see an irrigation system be a UNESCO site, but it is.
It is, yeah.
But it dates back 1,500 years, the one that exists now, and they say that there used to be ones there for another, 3,000 years before that. So back to 2,500 BC.
You just go in the village and see all the system that was set up, where the water was going and to the farming lands. It's impressive.
Yeah, I think you named all four UNESCO World Heritage Sites. We said one is way down on the other end of the country, which you didn't get to, I'm gathering, the land of the frankincense down by Yemen. Also don't know, as you get closer to Yemen, how safe that would be. Yemen is a place that I would probably avoid right now.
I did a lot of research, and unless you go really 100 meters from the border, there's actually no problem at all.
So on the Oman side, it's stable.
Safe. Okay. Yeah.
So if you were interested in seeing that, that would be the side of the border to go to right now.
Yes.
Anything else that we wanted to cover in terms of sites before we get to some of our overall questions?
You can do a side trip and go to the Musandam Peninsula. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, I explained to you there is a piece of land that is detached from mainland Oman.
Right.
And it's a peninsula at the end of the Emirates at the Strait of Hormuz. And it's very beautiful location with mountains dropping into the water. And it creates what people call fjord-like features. Mm-hmm. So it looks a bit like a fjord, but of course it's not been created by ice. So you have small islands, and you can go and take one of those old boats that are called dhow, D-H-O-W, and go on a boat and go snorkeling or just admire the sights.
Okay.
It's one of the favorite, and you can also do that from Dubai. If you just have one day in Dubai, just go there.
Right. In fact, those of you who are thinking this sounds at all familiar, this is the place that we talked about in the episode we did recently on the United Arab Emirates, and specifically talked about doing it from RAK, from the Emirate, which is the closest to the end of that peninsula.
Yeah. If you want to do it from Oman, you can take less than 1 hour flight from Muscat, or you can take the ferry from Muscat.
How long is the ferry, do you know?
I think it's 6 hours.
Okay, yeah, it looks like it's not right next door.
No.
So you mentioned camels, and I have to ask this from my wife, who had such so enjoyed riding camels on a couple trips we've done. When some people picture that, they're picturing being at the pyramids in Giza, and it's very, very touristy. Get on the camel, take a picture, get off the camel. Was that the same sort of situation that you were describing? No.
Yeah, Oman has really not become, it's not yet the touristy spot.
Right.
People are not seeing you and seeing tourist and big dollar signs. So you can ride camels in the desert at the tourist camp, but then you would go in the sand dunes and have a tour. You can sometimes drive on a road and see camels on the side. Just be careful, sometimes they can cross the road. And also I did some off-road driving with my guide. One day we stopped and we were looking at one canyon, and I turn around and I see these lines of camels behind, and this young boy dressed in white walking behind them. That was really cool. You don't expect it. So I really like dromedaries.
And then the other question would be, anything we should eat while we're in Oman?
It's a lot of fish.
I can
really
see
recommend
why.
The fish, because maybe you will notice when you travel there, but there's still traditional fishing.
Okay.
So it's two men on a small boat, and they throw the net. Mm-hmm. And then collect the fish and throw the nets. While camping on the beach, I woke up early morning to watch the sunrise. I saw a couple of boats setting up not far from me and just throwing the nets. So it's a lot of fresh fish. It's really nice. Otherwise, it's typical food of the region with meat and rice.
Okay. What surprised you about Oman?
Everywhere I go, I find people always really nice. But there is something really extra in Oman, how helpful people are. For example, every time I stopped on the side of the road, there were people stopping to check if we needed any help. When we stopped before entering the desert and we were deflating our tires, right away some people came and offered to measure the pressure in our tires to make sure everything was safe for us. And everybody stops to help and they never ask for money. They just want to help. One time I had this discussion with an old lady. I was in the mountains and she was originally from there and she told me her family used to live in a cave 50 years ago and she was showing her own family around. She decided to start chatting with me and her English was really good. And she asked me what I liked about our country and if I had a good time. So I told her and I like how kind people are. And she told me it is thanks to the Sultan. He told us to love everyone. It's not everywhere you see people stopping to help you.
No, right. Who's the most memorable person you met?
This man at the fish market. So if you go to the fish market, most people just walk around the market area. Mm-hmm. But you can try to find the pier when the boat arrives. So these small boats, as I told you, they come in the morning to bring their fish. And sometimes you can see old men removing fishes from nets. They don't speak English, but the interaction with them was very enjoyable. Big smiles, happy to show me what they were doing.
Excellent. Anything else we should know before we get to my last four questions?
As I said, tourism is not yet extremely developed. So outside of the capital city, there's not a wide range of hotels. So in the city, you can find luxury and everything. Outside, there is a little bit less choice. What I would recommend is going to a small village and staying in a guest house. So one of the most famous one is the old Misfa house. It's in Misfat al-Abrin. It's a small village in the mountain. I was there one night and we had dinner on the terrace. I was able to discuss with one of the family member that was owning the guest house. And he just talked about a lot of stories about the region and legends around people with kind of superpower.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a great time discovering some of the legends of the region. For example, someone with a very far eyesight or someone being able to transform into an animal. Very fun to talk with locals. So the guest house is better than hotels for that. And of course, the other option I told you about, wild camping, if you can have your own equipment or rent some equipment in the capital city, you're right there in nature. But remember that in the mountains, it can get cold. Even if it's summer, high in the mountain, it gets cold.
You're standing in the prettiest spot you saw in all of Oman. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I really enjoy, as I said, the top of the Nizwa Fort. So you're standing really at the top of the tower and you have this historical round wall of the tower. And below you, you have the rest of the castle. And further away, you have all the green of the trees and the white of the house. And all around the bare mountains. Very good example of all the colors and contrasts in Oman. It's one of the most memorable sights I have.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Oman.
I don't know if it's only in Oman, but it's actually the men who do the grocery shopping.
Okay.
Yeah, for example, in the Nizwa Souk, I didn't walk around the souvenir part. I went to the modern hall where they have the fruits and the vegetables, and it's groups of men, you know, discussing price and choosing their vegetables. And even outside, you have people in their car selling fruits and vegetables, and the men do the grocery shopping. So it was nice to see.
Finish this sentence. You really know you're in Oman when...
You see a fort every 5 minutes.
Okay. And if you had to summarize Oman in three words, what three words would you use?
Authentic, rooted.
Rooted. Long history sort of thing.
Yeah, and they protect their culture.
Okay.
And peaceful. As I mentioned, I had just lost my brother and traveling there was a really... really good for me. Because it's wild and preserved.
So that wasn't just the people being that, but also just the landscape.
The land, yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Well, our guest again has been Claire Robinson from Zigzag on Earth. zigzagonearth.com. First of all, why Zigzag on Earth?
Because when I started my blog, all the ones I was reading were from people that were always on the road. Mm-hmm. I was going to go somewhere and then coming back and then going for another holiday somewhere else. So I was kind of zigzagging.
Excellent.
And I like the word zigzag.
And do you have, it is a good word. Do you have one of the posts that you did on Oman that we ought to recommend people to read?
My video post. I've gathered a lot of videos I did so that mm-hmm. can give you a snapshot of what Oman is. Or you have the version with the photos. So I have one post with 35 pictures from Oman that will give you a good overview of what you could see there.
Excellent. Well, Claire, thanks so much for taking time to come on The Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Oman.
Thanks a lot for having me. I'm glad that I've been able to share my love for Oman.
As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I'm starting to get excited about both Japan and India. I listened to an audiobook on the history of India, and I've been studying a little bit of Japanese, although I don't expect to be fluent in any way, shape, or form before those trips. But if you're interested in joining me in Japan or India, go to the Amateur Traveler website under Book Travel and see the details of those two trips. Gillian used the contact button on the website to tell me, "Very much love listening to your show here in Australia. I just discovered you a few weeks back and love listening to the archives. Will be great to hear a podcast on Gdansk in Poland one day. Keep up the good work and best wishes for 2017. We have actually recorded, or at least started to record, two different shows on Gdansk, but they didn't work out. I was talking to somebody who is a native of Poland when we had enough trouble with the storytelling that I didn't show those shows, but I'm still interested in doing shows on Gdansk. So if there's somebody out there who has had a wonderful trip and can speak authoritatively on Gdansk, Poland, I would like to hear that show as well. I heard from Tom, who said, "Hi, Chris, just wanted to drop you a note and say happy birthday." Well, that was before my birthday, which was in the middle of December. Also, just got back from a trip to China. I studied up on your podcast and also learned the history using ChinaHistoryPodcast.com. Love the show, Tom. As I mentioned, for the India trip, I'm listening to the history. I think you can learn more in a place if you have some background in the history. And so, Tom, I'm with you. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or use the contact button, as Tom and Gillian did, or join us on the Facebook group, facebook.com/amateurtraveler. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more castle.